It's Monday. You know what time it is. Front Runner Podcast Collective is back on the air. I am your humble host, Vince, and we have a big show for you today. We're going to be getting into the teams that are developing this year. We're not going to call them tanking teams. We're not going to call them teams that are got nothing to hope for or whatever, because they do. And we're going to get into those teams. We're going to talk about some of the key players, some of the new additions. We're also going to talk about coaching and front office philosophies. And we're also going to talk about something that is really close to my heart. Lonzo Ball on Wednesday is going to be making his return to the Chicago Bulls. We're going to spend a couple moments on that, what he went through with the injuries and the surgery. And then a couple little news and notes and tidbits in there for you, but it is a very jam-packed show. And the reason why we're doing maybe a longer show today is because, unfortunately, for teams that are going to probably lose 50-plus games this year, they don't usually get talked about unless there's a trade or something happens. So I want to make sure that we hit those teams and make sure that we give them their due, because there's some young talent that is promising on some of those teams. Look forward to that. But before we get into the podcast, what do? We bring down the socials. So that's what we'll do right now. First things, X, at Frontrunner PC, that's me. And then the producers are at Rhea_Funch, FRPC. Make sure that you're following us there. It keeps you up to date with the podcast. Also, we're going to be doing some live tweeting this year. You're going to see that. I think I'll probably break it out sometime this week. I'm going to pick a game and go ahead and do that. The other thing is this, is that obviously if there is any news that breaks or whatever, you want to keep it locked here at Front Runner Podcast Collective. And this is how you stay in touch with us on Twitter. The other thing is that the YouTube page is still under construction. We do have videos that are about to go up. Those videos are pretty much ready. I'm waiting for a software. Waiting for a software. That's it. That's all I'm waiting for. As soon as I get that, those videos will go up, and then we can go ahead and move those along. But I'm really pumped about the community page and things of that nature. I think you guys will be jazzed about it too. The other thing is this, make sure that you are continuing our mantra of being a friend and telling a friend about this podcast. Because, again, did we leave you last week with two pods? No. We had a Saturday pod to make sure you had three pods a week. And you know what you're going to have this week? Another three pods. So keep it sure, keep it locked here at Front Runner Podcast Collective. And tell your friends about us. With all that being said, let's get into this podcast. And the first team that I want to talk about is the Washington Wizards. They had the youth movement going on. Obviously, it started a little bit last year. And we're going to focus in on a couple of players and talk about their team a little bit. First and foremost, the Washington Wizards are basically in a youth movement. They're focusing in on players such as Alex Starr and Bob Carrington from Pittsburgh, who they picked up in this year's draft as well. But they still have holdovers like veteran forward Kyle Kuzma and also Jonas Valanciunas, who they picked up in the offseason as well. Now, Valanciunas is basically going to be Alex Starr's bodyguard. If you saw him in the summer league and if you saw him when he played overseas last year, he was thin. So this is basically a situation of, let's see what he can physically hold up to. Let's see what the rigors of the NBA do to him. And who else to have by his side but big mountain of a man, Jonas Valanciunas. Now, we'll get to his staying power in the DMV area later, but that's the kind of I guess, oversee, if you want to call it the overview of what Alex Saar rookie year, at least the first 30 games, is going to look like. Now, this is all until December 15th, obviously, because then you can go ahead and make the people who were free agents in the offseason become eligible for trades. Here's what we know about Alex Saar so far. He's expected to be a future defensive cornerstone with his length. He's 7 feet tall with a 7'4" wingspan. His rim protection abilities are bountiful. Now, he averaged 3.6 blocks per game during his FIBA Under-19 World Cup. That was last year. So the guy can definitely rim protect at the highest level. The problem is that the offensive game, people want to tell you that there is offensive creation there. People want to tell you there's an outside shot there. I'm going to tell you right now, all of those things are under development. Those are not like actual features to his game that he should be utilizing on an NBA court right now, because he thinks too much. You can tell when he's going through the processes. When the game is on a full court, open court type situation, he's good. As soon as there's a defender in front of him, you can see him slow it down a little bit. He's thinking about what he wants to do. And those are just going to come with reps. I would right now keep that on the practice court. When you have skill sessions and things of that nature, and then when you're ready and comfortable with those to transfer over to the games, that's when you would go ahead and do. But for right now, we're looking for Alex Saar to just get comfortable with the physicality, to allow his wingspan and some of the defensive instincts to take over, and then allow him to be soft played as far as offense is concerned. The great thing about Washington at this present time, with Jordan Poole and Kyle Kuzma in the building, we don't have to worry about Alex Saar carrying any of the offensive load, because those guys are going to get up shots. You couldn't have a better tank commander if you tried. Shouts out to Jordan Poole. Now, the other guy that they're very high on is Carlton Carrington. He's a rookie from Pittsburgh. Now, Carrington's potential as a creative scoring guard offers promise for the Wizards, though his efficiency against NBA caliber defenders remains a concern. But obviously, guards take time to develop. We understand that in this world, especially in the NBA world, a young guard is like a young antelope on the Serengeti. Those lions are going to eat guards up like that, because they got their dribble packages. They are very confident in their move sets. They become even more efficient with some of their steps and some of their dribbles and what gets them in and out of their shots. But remember, they've been doing this for 5-6 years. So yeah, they're going to have a little bit of a advantage over Bob Carrington. But this is what I will say. Anybody that I'll talk to that is associated with the Wizards, they bring this guy's name up first. They love him in practice. They love the habits. They love the skill set. They think that he will be the three-point shooting, will play early. They do think that the offensive creation is there. Now, will he get eaten up on the defensive side of the ball? Yes. Because there are great guards all over the Eastern Conference and all over the league. And so he will get eaten up there. But what the hope is that with time and obviously with reps and with, you know, you growing your instincts, then these things will start to close up as the year goes on. It's kind of like when we were talking about Brandon Miller in the last podcast, is you saw exponential growth every single month with Brandon Miller. And the way the Washington Wizards are talking about Bob Carrington, I wonder if this is the type of development we're going to see with him. Now, we're not going to get ahead of ourselves. We're just giving you what the people are seeing about him right now. And then let's see it on the court. But I'm excited to see Bub Carrington. I was excited about him in the draft, but then it tapered off a little bit. I don't know if that was Jeff Capel's system or whatever, but it will be great to see him get a lot of opportunities with the Washington Wizards. Unless Jordan Poole or Kyle Kuzma decide to take over the game. Now, speaking of Kuzma, both veterans, Kuzma and Valanciunas, are likely trade pieces come December 15th. Kuzma, who averaged 21.2 points a game and also 7.2 rebounds last season, he's a versatile forward. What does every team in the league need? Versatile wings, right? The other thing that I'll say about Kyle Kuzma, now, it's been a while since he's been away from the Lakers, but remember, he was more of a defensive player when he was with the Lakers. This offense, he had offensive skills. They were there, but he's developed those over time. Now, he put the defensive chops on the back burner, allowed these offensive skills to flourish. So I wonder if he went to a better team, if he went to a team that was contending, would you get the balance? Would you finally get the balance where the shot is there? He's confident in his offensive skill package. And then you would still get the defensive versatility that you had when he was with the Lakers. Only time will tell, but there is that in his bag, or is it too far? Are we too far removed? And he's just more of an offensive player and hopefully a solid team defender to whatever team he goes to. It really is up to Kyle Kuzma at this point in time. Now, the other thing that I want to say is that Valanciunas is a strong rebounder, and this is why he is there. He's also a low post scorer, and he provides a detriment at the rim and provides some ruggedness to a very young Washington Wizards team. I will tell you that when December 15 rolls around, I think there will be a lot of suitors for Valanciunas. We've heard it here in LA already in regards to the Lakers. They were in on him during the offseason. I would look at the Knicks as another possibility for him, who they do need a center, especially if you think about Mitchell Robinson and his long-term future. With Valanciunas, know that you can put him in for 16 to 20 minutes and you can get productivity. And he doesn't have like a crazy injury history or what have you, and he's going to provide just solid minutes for you. Where Mitchell Robinson could provide high upside in the sense of his defensive capabilities. He has traits of people that could be all defensive NBA, but my whole thing is that you can't really rely on him being on the court because of the injury factor. So will you take a downgrade but then get availability, or do you just want to wait for the potential or Mitchell Robinson? These are questions that the New York Knicks will have to ask themselves. Now, other teams that might be in the mix for somebody like this, could there be a reunion down in the bayou? And Jonas Valanciunas did play center for the New Orleans Pelicans. Guess who needs a center? The New Orleans Pelicans, they need a center, damn it. I would think that would be maybe a possibility as well. I think anybody who is a contender, I think they would all need up. Phoenix definitely would love, but they don't have anything to give. Poor Phoenix. Can they buy first rounders? No, that's not part of the collective bargain agreement, right? All right. Let's hit some analytics for you. I know my analytics crew out there, they love it. The Wizards were ranked 25th in defensive rating last year. That's not hard to believe. Adding Sarr and his shot blocking ability could dramatically improve the rim protection. I'm going to doubt that. He's early on his career. Valanciunas is ranked in the top 15 in NBA offensive rebounds in the last season. He averaging 3.1 per game of offensive rebounds. This will help Washington on the boards 100%. If you are a situation where You got Jordan Poole on your team who can throw up some bricks. What's that kid, Davis? They still haven't gotten Davis out of the blocks yet. The kid out of Wisconsin from 3 years ago, he throws up a lot of bricks. Jonas Valanciunas is probably going to have a really good start to the year this season. It's going to be great. A lot of bricks in Washington right now. But that's okay because you're developing. And Sarr is one of your pieces. Also, with Bilal Coulibaly, keep in mind, there are 2-3 pieces here that you can really sink your teeth into with the Washington Wizards. If you're hoping for physicality and you're hoping for decisiveness out of Sarr and that the defensive capabilities play in the NBA, those are the things you're looking for. Well, Carrington, you're looking for basically floor general type mentality on the court. You're looking for him to be very free when he takes his jumper, and you're going to see if there's a little sauce to the game. Would he be able to break it out? Does he have enough confidence in himself and his abilities to go ahead and break that out? And then on the defensive end for Bub, you're just looking for that 6'4" frame to play. You're looking that he will be able to be a pretty solid team defender. See, as he grows, as he matures, as he continues to understand what it is to efficiently look at film, maybe the defense gets better. But those are the things that you're looking for, are improvement areas for your rookies. And then Bilal Coulibaly, remember last year he was 18. This year he's going into year 2, he's 19. You're just looking for, okay, I know what the NBA is all about. Now I know I've gotten a taste of the league. Let me see what I can do a little bit. Let's see what he worked on in the offseason to catapult him to really actually deserve minutes. Because this year is, you're going to get minutes this year. This is stockpiling for when you start to need to deserve minutes down the road for him. So we'll see all that go down. Now, the second team that I want to get to with the that might have a tough year is the Portland Trail Blazers. Year 2 for Scoop. And also, there's another thing that's going on in Portland, and we're going to get to it a little bit later, that really intrigues me. And somebody hopefully can answer this question for me on Twitter. Or if somebody in their front office can answer this question for me, it would be helpful. But let's talk about Portland a little bit. Portland is in a full rebuild centered around Scoop, Shaedon Sharpe, Anthony Simons. Obviously, they picked up Donovan Clingan in this last draft, and we'll get to him in a second. They're very excited about Shaedon Sharpe. They're very hopeful that Anthony Simons can play some defense. And then Scoop, he had a bad game his first game out. His second game was way better, and I was relieved because I was starting to think, man, did we just completely miss on this guy? But he did play well his second game. He shot the ball. He also did not turn over the ball as much. The first game was a complete disaster. But in the second game, he bounced back, hit 7 assists, I believe 3 turnovers, which was a whole hell of a lot better than the first game prior. And then they have Donovan Clingan. And Donovan Clingan, with Scoot Henderson and also with Shaedon Sharpe, they have some real interesting development pathway obstacles, and we're going to get into that right now. With all this talent, all this guard talent that the Portland Trail Blazers possess, I do have one question. How come you got 28 feet of center on your team? Can somebody explain to me why the Portland Trail Blazers have on payroll and give minutes to DeAndre Ayton, Robert Williams III, Diop Reap, who played well last year for them because DeAndre Ayton definitely didn't. And Robert Williams was hurt, which is a ongoing storyline within his career. But then you draft Donovan Clingan, which I'm not upset about. I think he's a winner. I think he provides a lot of things for the Portland Trailblazers, especially with the young guards. I love for them to all mature together. But my question is in every part of your team, there is a veteran that is in the way. And I just don't understand it. We can talk about Scoot and last year and how Malcolm Brogdon was there. We could talk about Shaedon Sharpe and how there were Matisse Thybulle and Jeremy Grant is there. We can talk about Anthony Simons and how he was beyond, you know, he was beyond the shadows of Damian Lillard forever. And then now you have Donovan Clingan, who is behind DeAndre Ayton, Robert Williams III, and you could play him with Diop Reap. You could, because Diop Reap can shoot threes, so that's not a problem. But my question is where are the trades? Did you account for this in the offseason? Are you at a point where you have your own picks? It's not like you're suffering for picks or anything. I'm not saying that DeAndre Ayton shouldn't get you something back, but are you so choosy that you understand right now he's a sunk cost? So if you're looking for two first-round picks for him, I don't think that's what you're getting. Now, Robert Williams III, I would think that, yes, as soon as you can get like a clean bill of health, you can go ahead and trade him. That's been the problem, is he's been a failure to launch a lot of times. And unfortunately, I wonder if this is just how it's going to end up being for Robert Williams. If at any point in time they can get 15 to 20 games out of this dude, I'm trading him right on the spot. Do not pass go. Do not collect the $200 or whatever the case may be. What the hell the games the kids are playing nowadays? I don't know. The hell they playing? Yeah. You got all that. You got all these obstacles that are in the pathway of development with all these guys. But let's get into Scoot. After last year, which was a really abysmal year, he shot 27.5% from three. That has to change. That has to get better. Now, towards the end of the year, they said he shot better. There were glasses, corrective glasses, whatever the case may be. He got hit in the eye. I don't know. But that has to get better this year. The shooting must come. Not saying that it has to be 38, 39%, but we got to be in the range of 34. We got to see some improvement. The other thing is that he has to value the basketball. He has to make sure that let's make the correct pass, not the flashy pass. Let's also understand that we are 6'2", and sometimes we can get swallowed up by lengthy wing defenders. I think that he needs to not get himself around the out-of-bounds line and things of that nature. He also needs to start to be able to understand his own physicality and just his leverage that he has, and he should be able to, shoulder-wise, move people out the way a little bit. I want to see that progress this year. These are all things that Scoot can work on, and these are the things that, as I said last year, I thought he was such a competitor and such a person that was going to work so hard. Now, last year was such a wash with all of what was going on. I mean, it was a complete soap opera in Portland. You had Damian Lillard leaving. You had Jeremy Grant staying, and then was he staying? And then, yeah, he's staying. And, you know, you had Malcolm Brogdon there for a short period of time. You had Drew Holiday there. And this kid had to have his head spinning. And we weren't even, like, in November yet with all this. You imagine, you wake up, you get drafted, and at first, you look at your roster. You got Damian Lillard on the squad. You know, you got Anthony Simon, you got Shaedon Sharpe. Damn, okay, we got a lot of guards on the squad. Then you hear Damian Lillard gets traded. You're like, okay, all right, now I see a pathway for me. Oh, wait, hold on. They got Drew Holiday back in the deal. Damn. I wonder if I'm going to play. Then, a couple weeks later, you find out Drew Holiday gets traded. You're like, hooray, damn it, I'm going to play. And then you find out that Malcolm Brogdon came back in that deal. You're like, God, damn it, when am I going to play? That's a lot to do with a young kid. Now, Chauncey Billups went through a lot of this kind of stuff early on in his career trying to find himself. Now, I don't know how long of a leash that Chauncey has in Portland. I haven't heard either way. I haven't heard, well, he's on the hot seat or you know, he has a long leash. I've heard basically Chauncey's the coach and we kind of reevaluate at the end of the season, pretty much. So if Chauncey's the coach, I do think it bodes well for Scoot in his developmental path. However, I still think we need to get a couple vets out of here so the kids can really get emboldened and start to be empowered to grasp these opportunities and able to go ahead and learn from them. Just a thought. Get rid of 28 feet of center. You only need 14 feet of center. Damn it. Analytics. Portland was 28th in the league in three-point percentage last year at 34%. Henderson and Sharp are going to have to thrive. They need to be shooting. They're going to need to be shooting more threes. They're going to need to shoot them at a high clip. And I hope at now we are going to start to right the ship and get the young players in to play basketball. Because there should be 28 minutes for Donovan Clingan, Shaedon Sharpe, Scoot Henderson on the court together. I don't mind a veteran being with them, but I do mind a veteran eating into their shots and opportunity. We move along to a team that last year had a real tough year, so they cleaned house. So the Detroit Pistons are our next team that I want to focus on. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is that Tom Gores, the governor of the Detroit Pistons, got rid of his entire front office. He got rid of his coach and started anew. So Trajan Langdon comes in from New Orleans. He was underneath David Griffin, longtime guy in the NBA. He was also a former first-round pick out of Duke. And now he is the head guy up in Detroit. Who comes along with him is also very important as well. Gone is Monty Williams, who did not want to coach young players. In comes J.B. Bickerstaff, who is absolutely key to developing young players. So now you have the right coach with the right roster. So that is a step in the right direction. Now, let's talk about some of the key guys on the Detroit Pistons. The Detroit Pistons have an abundance of young talent that has yet to hit its stride. Part of that is Cade Cunningham, which right now is a franchise player. And then along with Cunningham, you have Jaden Ivey and also Jalen Durant. Both promising young pieces. However, the Pistons still face major issues with shooting and spacing. This was the case last season. Cade Cunningham going into the fourth year. He's a gifted playmaker. Last year, he almost averaged 20 points a game at 19.9. He also averaged 6.2 assists a game and 5.7 rebounds. But he shot 30% from three. That's the bugaboo. Jaden Ivey heading into year three. That guy got the short end of the stick with Monty Williams. For some reason, Monty Williams used him as the basically the F around and find out guy last year. Remember, he was out of the starting lineup. Sometimes he would play, sometimes he wouldn't play. He pretty much got dicked around the whole time last year. Now with J.B. Bickerstaff, that Ivy is going to play, which is great. But with his up and down season, with being yo-yoed out in and out of the roster, Jaden Ivey shot 32.4% from three, and his ability to attack the rim makes him one of the most exciting young guards in the league, but improving his shot will be critical to his future in Detroit's as well. 100%. Now, here's the thing that I found very, very interesting. Somebody, hopefully on Twitter, who will hit me up at FrontRunnerPC will let me know why this is. Okay. We talked about it last year. And now we had the regime change. We're going to talk about it again this year. So, in the draft, right? Now, albeit they had the 5th overall pick, which is not very advantageous for what their record was last year. When you lose over 60 games, it's a tough situation, dog. It's just tough. But they had the 5th overall pick. Now, mind you, this draft was iffy at best. People were trying to figure out things and whatever. But I understand that Reed Shepard might have been somebody they were looking at. Maybe Zachary Richey was somebody they were looking at, or whatever the case may be. But they ended up selecting Ron Holland. Now, I don't have a problem with Ron Holland being selected, but here is the issue. You had to trade, like, actual stuff to get shooters in last year. Then this year, and we'll talk about some of your re-signing and then your big free agent move. But getting Ron Holland and then last year getting Ausar Thompson, these are both like super freak athletes. If they hit, they're going to be amazing. But the problem is that Ron Holland can't shoot and Ausar Thompson shot like damn near out. Did he shoot 20% last year? No, I don't even think so. Again, I ask about the floor spacing issues, which this is bringing us to the next thing we were going to talk about. They were 29th in the league in three-point percentage last year. Now, Tobias Harris and Simone Fontecchio, now that was the guy they picked up late last season during the trade deadline season, and he did help. I will 100% say he did help. But, so they're relying on Tobias Harris, who was 39% from three last year, but he tends to become invisible sometimes. And Simone Fontecchio. These aren't guys that should be taking shots, though. And I don't mean that in a rude way. What I mean is that the opportunities need to come to KIV and Dorn. Now, where does Ron Holland fit into the future plans? Does he supersede Ausar Thompson? Is Jaden Ivey and or Cade Cunningham up for grabs? I don't know. But there's a lot of youth. Still not a lot of floor spacing. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. I just don't know. So Detroit's core, it to me, is not clear. You got to start making choices. You got Cade. You got Ivy. You got Dorn. Then you got Ron Holland. You got Marcus Sasser, who you picked up in the late first round last year, who could actually shoot it. And then you got Ron Holland this year. So Ron Holland, Ausar, and Marcus Sasser. And then you got three other young players that really got stymied by development because of coaching and or lack of vision of the front office that was there previous. There's a lot to sort out in Detroit. And this is another year where it's going to be dire, but this is the year where I honestly pick a direction. Say, when you get to the end of this year, this is what I want for Detroit fans. I want them to get to the end of this year and say, Cade is a part of our future. Jalen Dorn is part of our future. Ron Holland is part of our future. Jaden Ivey, I want them to say, these guys are part of our, this is the core that we're going to build around, and then we're going to start putting pieces around it. Now, obviously, the play must get better. The players must be more efficient. There needs to be less turnovers, but also, again, is this the right incubation chamber to develop some of this talent? And I'm not speaking upon the front office or the new coaches that are there. It's just going to take time to see what you have and then which direction you want to go in. I think it's all up in the air, honestly, to tell you the truth. Which leads us to our next team, which is also a team that has a lot of questions to it. And that is your Chicago Bulls. Now, Chicago, their backcourt features Josh Giddey, who they got in the Alex Caruso trade, which again, Arturas Karnišovas, I wish he could tell me, how come you couldn't get a first-round pick from OKC, who has like 16 first-round picks? That's a question. So they get Josh Giddey. Kobe White had a breakout season last year. Zach LaVine is back and putting up points. If you didn't see that preseason game, my man came in. He said, listen, I'm not here for a long time. I'm here for a good time. Okay? He came in 21 minutes, 23 points, efficient shooting, shot 4-6 from three, and said, I'm out. Okay? So along with that also, and we'll get into this a little bit later, but Lonzo Ball will be making his debut on Wednesday, and I can't wait to talk about that. And I also can't wait to dive into all the things I went into. But so keep that in mind. You have Giddey. You have Lonzo Ball. You have Zach LaVine and Kobe White. So got these four guards. They all need time. Remember what you did when Kobe White was inserted into the starting lineup. Now, here's the thing. Josh Giddey, he's the new addition. He averaged 16.6 points a game last year. He is going to provide rebounding. He averaged 7.9 rebounds last year, and he is a terrific playmaker at 6.2 assists last year. He is a great playmaker. However, he only shoots 32% from three. That's his bugaboo. That's always been his bugaboo. But we'll see what can happen in Chicago with the new lease on life. Kobe White, however, he shot 38.5% last year. It was a renaissance for Kobe White. They got him on a great deal. I think in 4 years, $13 million. You can't ask for the type of production you're getting for $13 million from Kobe White. And my whole thing is this, is that does this continue for him? Does he get rewarded for what he did, you know, when Zach went out with the injury to his foot? And by the moves, you go, I wonder, is he like the odd man out at this point? Because you got to create minutes. You got to create opportunities for these guys. Enter Zach LaVine. 24.8 points a game on 48.5 shooting. He's an elite shooter, but he's ball dominant. Those two right there, Giddey and LaVine, are going to clash. And then you still got Kobe White to feed, who also needs the ball. You see the conundrum that we're talking about here? Here's the deal. I don't know how they're going to do it. They got to trade LaVine. They got to figure it out. Here's the thing. You're going to have to eat into the development of the young guys, because I haven't even gotten to Matis Buzelis, who is their 6'8" Lithuanian wing that they got in the draft this year. So Patrick Williams is supposed to still be on development path. You saw what Kobe White was able to do when he got the opportunity. When is it going to be time for the young guys to be able to flourish in Chicago? Because I know for a fact that my Chi-Town players out there, they want the rebuild. They want the rebuild. They don't want this middling we got a chance in the play-in to get into the playoffs to only get obliterated by whoever the one seed is. That is not what my real Chicago folks want. They want, listen, let's develop the young guys. Let's ease LaVine out. Let's see what Lonzo's working with and it'll give him a year to get ramped up, whatever, and see if we can build his value as far as that's concerned. And then let's allow these young guys to develop. That's my thoughts on Chicago. Yo, did anybody see this situation between Dante DiVincenzo and Rick Brunson of the New York Knicks in the last couple days? All right, so Dante DiVincenzo's at the free throw line, and they seem to... So Dante DiVincenzo was traded with along with Julius Randle for Karl Anthony Towns. So Karl Anthony Towns go to the Knicks. Julius Randle, Dante DiVincenzo go to the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're back in MSG. And Dante was getting spicy, right? So he's at the free throw line. And I don't know what was yelled out, but Dante looks over and says, oh, they letting you run this? Oh, we see how it is when you run this. And then once that was over, after the game, there was some sort of heated exchange between Dante DiVincenzo and assistant coach Rick Brunson, who's also the father of one Jalen Brunson. And then, you know, we had the whole Villanova Knicks thing that we didn't even get to see because Dante DiVincenzo was jettisoned off to Minnesota for Karl Anthony Towns, which I'm not saying is a bad move or whatever, but you can tell there was some real heated feelings about that situation. Now, Rick Brunson and Dante DiVincenzo both downplayed the incident. They did not want to talk about whatever their conversation was on the court after the game. They said, hey, that's a private matter between us men. All I know is this about this situation is that Dante DiVincenzo is about that work. He gonna give it to whoever wants it. We might have been talking about Julius Randle having a chip on his shoulder. Oh my God, I can just see Anthony Edwards now just twiddling his fingers like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons. And he's just going, yes, I will use this to my advantage. Nothing like some preseason like tomfoolery to get us going and stuff. Just great. All right. The next team that I want to get into is the Toronto Raptors. Toronto is, it seems like they're fully embracing the tank with Scottie Barnes positioned as the franchise centerpiece. The team also added Jacoby Walter. And then last year, they added Grady Dick, who struggled last year mightily. I think he was physically not able to hold up mostly. And then they had the in-season trade where they traded OG Anunoby to the Knicks for RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley. They also followed that trade up with Pascal Siakam leaving town as well. There's been some house cleaning. Scottie Barnes, now the focal point, 15.3 points. Yeah, it was almost 20 a game last year, and he shot the ball better last year as well. His three-point shooting was better last year. He almost scored like 20 points a game last year. He was the primary ball handler. He was the guy. He wasn't, there was no, okay, I got to worry about Pascal. I got to worry about this. I got to worry about that. No, it was finally Scottie Barnes' team last year, and now it's just about putting the right talent around him. RJ Barrett came in. He seemed to found a decent little role. We would love for him to shoot it a little bit better and maybe a little bit more, but that's what Grady Dick and Jacoby Walter are for, because 40.5%. That is what he shot from three last year. This is a ultra-confident shooter of the highest level, and I can't wait to see him unleashed up in Toronto. Now, this is what Jonathan Givony had to say about Jacoby Walter. He said that he's a smooth shooter. His catch and shoot, his catch and shoot is around 46.3%, which is really good. He said that off the dribble, he was a 35% three-point shooter in college. So if all these things continue to blossom in Toronto, they might have got themselves a sniper. And then also another year of Grady Dick getting his legs underneath him could be helpful. I think that guy can shoot, and we'll see if it plays out this year. The other team that I want to talk about is the Brooklyn Nets. Now, the Brooklyn Nets, to me, are, wow, I don't even know what to say. They're going to be terrible this year. They're trying to be terrible. They are trying to capture the flag, lag for flag, dupe for coup. All of these puns are welcomed here at Front Runner Podcast Collective. But here's the thing with the Brooklyn Nets that I do still have an issue with. They have some holdovers. Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith, to be specific. All right? There's a lot of intrigue around the league around those two because of the fact that everybody needs a wing. So you thought in the offseason that they would be traded. They did not get traded. They are still on the team. Now, you also have Cam Thomas. Now, known for his scoring burst, Cam Thomas averaged, what did Cam average last year? 18. Here is just a volume shooter at the highest level. He shoots the ball like no conscience. There's not a shot that he has not liked. If it's 33 feet away and somebody's draped all over him and somebody's wide open, he's still going to shoot that shot. That's what Cam Thomas does. He is a shooter. Now, they say they are going to try to expand his game. They're going to also try to refine his shot selection this year to improve his efficiency. These are the areas that they are looking to see vast improvement from Cam Thomas. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. Cam Thomas is not about, he's really not about not taking opportunities. You telling him to pass up a good shot for a great shot? Woo! Okay. Can't wait to see how that works out. All right, Ben Simmons also. Let's talk Ben. I can't believe we're still talking about Ben Simmons after all these years. After an offseason where my man has gone to Met Galas, he's all over IG, flourishing, looking like a model and everything. Ben Simmons has come down off the mountaintop and has told us that he is healthy. And he says, when I'm healthy, I'm a pretty good basketball player. And y'all all gonna see this year. Again, shouts out to Digital Underground, and rest in peace, Tupac Shakur, because I'm gonna go ahead and say it right now. Same song. All right? Same song. All around the world. Same song, Ben. You said that last year, and you said that the year before. Here's the thing. They're tanking, so it doesn't really matter. But my question is that for the Jalen Wilsons, the Noah Clowney of the world, when are their opportunities going to come? And also, how can you tank when you got a couple really competent veterans in Cam Johnson and Dorian Finney-Smith on your team? I'm not saying that because the odds have flattened. I'm not saying you have to lose 65 games. I'm just saying you definitely don't want to be in the 30 range. You want to be lower. You want to be in the 25 range, somewhere in there. 23, even better. But you do not want to be in the 30-plus, 33-win category. That gets you down to 12 in the lottery. And then the last team that we're going to talk about before we talk about Lonzo Ball is the Utah Jazz. Now, the Utah Jazz, to me, I love in one way, and in some ways, we going to have some real problems in a second. Now, the Jazz are loaded with young talent. They also signed Lauri Markkanen, who's still fairly young and like 27. Go figure. It's what happens when you come into the league when you're like 14 years of age. I'm kidding. He came into the league when he was 19. Just calm down. You also have Keontae George. You got Cody Williams from Colorado in this last draft. Oh, let's talk Taylor Hendricks as well. And Kyle Filipowski and Isaiah Collier, who you also got in this prior draft as well. And we're going to talk about a lot of guys in a second here, but they got a lot of people. Now, Keontae George and Taylor Hendricks are going into their second seasons. George showed a lot of promise last year in his minutes that he got. There were games where you saw the floater. There were games where you saw just the self-creation and also creation for others with Keontae George. Now, obviously, he struggled on the defensive end. I actually thought, as far as the way he handled the basketball, as far as turnovers were concerned, I thought he did a really excellent job with that. I thought he actually valued the basketball for a young guy. Now, the same cannot be said for Taylor Hendricks. He struggled to find consistency. Now, here's the thing. You can't find consistency if you don't get consistent playing time. My guy was behind the eight ball. Remember, Lauri Markkanen's on this team, right? We got Jordan Clarkson, who plays some wing minutes. We got Bryce Sensabaugh, who plays some wing minutes. That was a kid out of Ohio State they got last year as well. Not this last, in the 2023 draft, so I want to be correct. He just did not get an opportunity, and I was befuddled why. Now, Will Hardy, one of the great young coaches in this game, one of the up-and-comers. Here's the thing. Will Hardy has his reason, and I'm going to support Will Hardy. Obviously, there was some sort of, he was not ready to play, whether it was the physicality or whether it was obtaining or retaining the principles and the philosophies of the defense and offense and where he fit into those things. So I hope that this year that Taylor Hendricks does get a real opportunity to play, a real opportunity to develop. But here's the other thing. If it didn't work last year, right, we got Cody Williams this year to make sure we got our, they got a type, obviously. So you get Taylor Hendricks in the 2023 draft, and then you re-up and then get Cody Williams in the 2024 draft, who's a string wing forward, 6'8", 6'7", real pretty good wingspan, has some offensive creation a little bit. Defense is where his calling card is at this point in time. Also, deflections of plenty. He rebounds well for somebody who is as slight as he is. Now, with Cody Williams, you get a little less tentativeness. He's going to find his shot. Trust and believe. Not saying he's a ball hog, just saying that he's aggressive. And then you also got Isaiah Collier. Now, Isaiah Collier was a kid that was one of the high recruit five-star dudes, went to USC, had a season from hell, not just because of his play, but just the whole vibe at USC just went to hell after Bronny suffered that cardiac arrest situation. I don't know what he did to the team, but there was a cloud hanging over it. Edenfield gets fired. They bring in Musselman. So hopefully that program is back on track there. But Isaiah Collier really never captured or found any ground to gain momentum at all last year. But high upside, excellent independent creator for himself. And then the other thing with Isaiah Collier is that he can be a bucket. Now, we didn't get to see it at USC, but prior to USC, that's what he was known for on the high school levels when he played in the Peach Jam tournaments and also some of the other like Olympic, like World Cup situations and things of that nature, Isaiah Collier was a baller. So here's another team that have got a ton of rookies and a ton of second year players and a lot of people to develop. We just talked, you got Cody Williams, you got Isaiah Collier, you got Taylor Hendricks, you got Keontae George. It's duplicity at the highest level at every position. And then we still got Lauri Markkanen, we still got Jordan Clarkson, and we still got Colin Sexton. So if you think about it, if you're looking at Keontae George and if you almost break it down like a position room in football, right? So you got the guards. We got Keontae George. We sitting over here with Isaiah Collier. We got Colin Sexton. Jordan Clarkson can be in on that meeting. Okay, let's move over. Right? Let's move over to the wings. You got Cody Williams. We got Taylor Hendricks, we got Lauri Markkanen, we got Bryce Sensabaugh. We got, John Collins. Depending on whether you want to put him at the big. If you want to put him at the big, that's going to shout out our guy, Kyle Filipowski. We're going to get to Kyle in a second. Trust me, there's some funny stuff with him. But there's a lot of duplicity with this roster, and I wonder, is there a trade to thin it out? Is there something that happens soon that allows these young guys to develop at a rate where it's comfortable and they get the minutes and they get the reps? Or is it just competition, dog eat dog, and we just go that way? Lot to figure out in Utah. And Danny Ainge is the puppet master of the whole situation. So we will see. Now, Kyle Filipowski got his own issues. He's got Walker Kessler there. He's got John Collins and some other dudes there. So my man is sitting there saying, hey, the thing that I can do is shoot that thing. I can shoot the corner three. So that's how I'm going to, in a sense, make myself different, separate myself from the group, is that I can provide floor spacing for the Jazz when I'm on the court because I'm 7 feet. And I can shoot the three. Now, here's my question to Utah. Are you too competent to tank? Because this is the year, supposedly, that they're supposed to tank. Lauri Markkanen is a bucket. He averaged like 25 points. You know, he's averaging 8 rebounds a game. He's shooting at a high level, shooting 38.6% from three. Again, I talk about Colin Sexton. Again, I talk about Jordan Clarkson. There's a lot of guys. And then you add in the brilliance that is Will Hardy, to me, is a really good young coach. He seemed to have his X's and O's down pat. He has a philosophy. He has defensive cues and basically like little tricks of the trade. His out-of-timeout plays are excellent. They seem very succinct. And to me, you got enough talent and then you got enough coaching talent just to be good enough to keep you out of the range, the guys that are the high guys. I'm talking about the VJ Edgecombs of the world, the Cooper Flags of the world, the Ace Baileys of the world, the Dylan Harpers of the world, the Nolan Traores of the world, those guys. Now, we did say this is a deep draft, so maybe Danny Ainge doesn't care whether he's 8 or 12 or 4 or 13. He might not care because he's got a lot of talent on this team, and Will Hardy is an absolute evil genius, and he'll figure out a way for this team, even as young as it is, to win 35 to 37 games unless they have some sort of talent reduction that happens throughout the year, either through injury or through trade. That's my thoughts on that. Now, I told you that we were going to get to Lonzo Ball. And the reason why we're going to talk about Lonzo today is because of two reasons. One, he was a UCLA Bruin for 1 year. My affinity for that program. You'll know my affinity for Coach Cronin, A-Clap all day. And as bad as the UCLA football team is in the Big Ten, just wait. Just wait for Big Ten basketball. I'll see Ohio State and Indiana and Minnesota on the hardwood. You might got us on the gridiron, big boys, but we'll see you in basketball. We'll see what's up. Now, Lonzo obviously had an injury in January of 2022. He's had multiple knee injuries prior. In March of 2023, the doctors gave him a cartilage transplant surgery. Now, this is a risky procedure. When he originally suffered the meniscus tear after two unsuccessful surgeries, this transplant was seen as the final option to save his career. They did the surgery. It wasn't taken. I want to talk about that a little bit. There were reports last season that Lonzo Ball couldn't walk up a flight of stairs. There were points where they were talking about learning how to walk again. Like, walk correctly. I'm not talking about like walk again, but walk correctly so he could strengthen the leg and be able to, in a sense, rehab it as he's moving and providing motion. So let's talk about the procedure a little bit. Cartilage transplant surgeries are uncommon in professional sports as they involve either a donor cartilage or a synthetic materials being used to repair damaged tissues. Recovery is uncertain and can take between 12 to 18 months with no guarantee that a player or a person would ever get back to what they consider normal. Now, Ball's recovery was slow. Obviously, there was no timetable put on it. He noted that some of the biggest challenges he had was regaining some of his lateral quickness and his explosion that made him an elite defender. God hope. While the Bulls hope Ball can return this year, there's strong possibility that he's going to be playing like back-to-backs are out, right? We can just let those go, especially with where Chicago is in their development. We talked about all the young guys they have, all the guards they have. So some of that we brought up as a concern, some of it will be alleviated by Lonzo coming back this year with this type of surgery. I'm definitely sure that back-to-backs will not be in his future, at least until either late in the season this year or even starting next year. That's something that we don't have to worry about. I'm just happy to see him back on the court. I'm happy to see him get, because when he left, it was the best Lonzo Ball we had ever seen. He was the get the ball in his hands, get the ball out of his hands quick, found efficient passes, the look aheads to his teammates for easy leak out buckets. You name it, he was doing it, and he was shooting a three at a really good pace, and he was also defending well. And this was the best stretch of Chicago Bulls basketball that they had seen in quite some time. And then the knee injury happened. And at this point, if he got back to 80% of what he was pre-injury, that's a win. That's a win for the Bulls. That's a win for us NBA fans. And, you know, I think it's a win for Lonzo. I'm not thinking that he's going to be back to what he was the day he got hurt. But if he can show just remnants of that, and still his intellect, his basketball IQ is still top notch, I could see that Lonzo could turn into like maybe a more explosive. Now, when I say this, you guys gonna freak out, but he'll be a more explosive Livingston, the guy that played up in Golden State. Yeah, Livingston was a really good backup guard who could come in, settle the team down when things weren't going right. And he had a catastrophic knee injury with the Clippers. And I wonder if we could get that type of version of Lonzo Ball in Chicago. My hope that we will. My hope is that Lonzo, who has been just, he had injuries with LA. He had injuries in New Orleans. And he just got healthy with Chicago, and he was just playing again. I said again, he was playing his best basketball he had ever played. And now this. So on Wednesday when he plays, it will be a big night for Lonzo. It'll be a big night probably for the Ball family. And my hope is that the young man can come back, play the game he loves at a level where he feels like I'm contributing and I feel good about myself. And let's see where the chips fall, where they may. But at this point, we're going to get to see him on the court, and I can't wait to see it. Shouts out to Lonzo Ball and the just extensive rehab that he did. Shouts out to the surgeons for this, like, just incredible surgery that they pulled off. And we're going to get to see him Wednesday, folks, so I can't wait to see it. Now, that's it for the day. I think we've done enough. It's like we've done like 75 minutes. This is crazy. But we wanted to get through some of these teams. Now, mind you, Wednesday is going to be the Eastern Conference basically predictions. So we're going to go like 1 through 8, obviously 1 through 10, whatever, and go from there. And then Friday, we're going to do the same thing for the West. Okay? And then next Monday, so a week from today, is our big prediction show for all the awards. So Defensive Player of the Year Award, NBA Rookie of the Year, MVP, all NBA teams, all defensive teams. We don't do that dumb clutch award, Coach of the Year, all of those type of things we will do. So that is your schedule for the rest of the week. You know where to keep it. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with Front Runner Podcast Collective. With that being said, I want to thank my producers because they did a lot of heavy lifting on this show. A lot of these stats and numbers were provided by them. So shouts out to Soraya. Shouts out to Bunch of Funch, who really did yeoman's work today. And we're going to leave you with this. The best part of you is you. Make sure that the people that you surround yourself with are just brightening your light, that they're able to allow you to go out and do some good in the world. And then we'll see you back on this feed on Wednesday. Peace.